Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson.
I'm Sam Delaney.
Welcome along to this episode of The Keen Odyssey 2. This is part 5. And we ended the last episode where Roy was about to play in the FA Cup final, that ill-fated 1991 FA Cup final where Paul Gascoigne fucked everything forever. It was Brian Clough's last chance to win the FA Cup, the trophy that had eluded him throughout his career. And on the day, you know, the biggest match of Roy's career so far, you would say, he spent a lot of the day in a bit of a flap, trying to track down tickets for friends and family members.
So weird, this. It's fascinating too, isn't it? He said the biggest thing about getting to a cup final is the amount of pressure you come under for tickets. And he writes about how it got to him, and it got inside. Not many things get inside his mind. He's always like, he's mentally strong, he's focused on the game.
Yeah.
In both volumes of the books that we've read about him, this is the only time he admits, other than Yaffle, that anything outside of his focused professionalism got in the way.
Yeah, exactly. He says, our ticket allocation of 20 was guaranteed to cause everyone grief. Friends, family, relatives, anyone who'd ever done you a favour or had ever done a favour for any of your friends, family or relatives, all wanted a cup final ticket. It was life or death, a considerable burden on players facing an important football match. Shouldn't be like that, should it?
It shouldn't, but do you know what? It won't be anymore. If you get into cup final now, no one gives a fuck.
No, they don't.
Back then in 91, I remember vividly that Spurs-Forest cup final. Mm-hmm. It was really exciting. Exciting mainly because of Gazza on one side, Clough on the other.
Yep.
Two sort of attacking teams. It was really exciting. Of course you'd want a ticket. Whoever you were, you would want a ticket. Yeah. Nowadays, I mean, who gives... If someone said to you, Andy Dawson, I've got a couple of tickets for the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
There's a chance you might say yes and see if your son wants to go, but you'd fucking look at your diary first and think, what else have I got on?
And then, of course, you've got to look at getting home afterwards because they put the frigging thing on at 5:15 or whatever now.
Exactly.
It doesn't help anybody. I mean, I watched the Carabao Cup?
Yeah.
See, I can't even remember what it's called.
I know.
That was last Sunday, and that was a damn squib.
Yeah,
you know, nobody wanted to be there. I know City fans that didn't go because
I'd have been gutted if I'd gone to that. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, well, I might have just left.
I mean, Sunderland got to the final of it 5 years ago.
Did they? I don't even remember.
Yeah, we got beat from Man City 3-1.
Right,
but we turned London red and white.
Did you?
For the whole weekend.
Well, that's the fun part. It's not the game. It's not the game. It's just going to Wembley, having your day out or your weekend out.
Yeah.
But, this really got to Roy in a big way, didn't it?
Yeah, he says, all in total, he had requests for 45 tickets. Even then, I was bound to make enemies, which I kind of think he probably enjoyed that element to it. He could thin out the
ranks. I saw it as a great opportunity to make more enemies.
Yeah, and by this time, I was quite popular. I had far too many friends. I saw this as a good opportunity to thin out the ranks somewhat and get the numbers down and get a few people against me that I could use in the future.
To channel my rage.
It's the... My abiding memory of my first major football occasion concerns the scramble for precious tickets. Everyone was coming from Cork. And, it goes on and on. He says, the problem would persist, indeed become perhaps the biggest single source of anxiety, a recurring feature of my life when I moved to Manchester United.
Fucking hell.
So forever and ever he's had this
the fucking tickets! Everyone, I go to sleep, I see tickets. I shut my eyes. All I can hear is someone on the phone saying I need tickets for the game.
Do you remember the advert for the Access credit card? Where the little credit card used to walk around with the legs and everything and chat to people. It was like that, but I had a big ticket in my head and it had legs and it was coming at me, swinging, trying to take me belts.
He wasn't friendly like the wee Access man was. He was the opposite.
It was an angry ticket.
This was cast was long before the days that Yaffle got inside my dreams. He was very much the precursor to that.
Proto Yaffle.
Yes, that's what I call him. Mr. Ticket, his name was. Oh, Mr. Ticket, is that you haunting my dreams again? Go on, fuck off!
I'm coming for you, Roy. And behind me, there's 60 people who all want a piece of me. But there's only one of me. What you gonna do? Who you gonna disappoint, Roy? Who you gonna disappoint this time?
Fuck
your
off!
Your mommy! Your mommy!
Fuck off, Mr. Ticket!
So, yeah. And then he said, I begged and scrounged every ticket I could lay my hands on. 2 hours before the game, the ticket crisis was still a major preoccupation. His brothers Dennis and Johnson still had no tickets.
Hello, Roy. It's me, Dennis. Yeah, I'm with Johnson. We're outside Wembley now, you know. Where do we pick up the tickets?
Do we just let ourselves in? Just walk in?
The fella's on the door saying we can't come in. We told him that we're your brother, like, but he doesn't seem to care. Can you have a wee word with him?
He says maybe I'd cop a couple of spare tickets at the last minute. In the end, I got my hand on one spare ticket, but one was not enough. I had £900 in cash in my pocket, 4 weeks' wages.
Fucking hell.
He says, fuck it, I thought. I'll give it to the lads and they can buy two off the ticket touts. I gave my brothers the money and prayed they'd find a tout.
I reckon they went down the boozer with that.
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't watch it on the telly.
Do you know, now we got this money, Jansen, I'm starting to think to myself, do we want to see the game? I mean, it's good. I don't know. I haven't got high hopes for it. And this could buy a lot of drinks for us. Maybe some of the pals as well. I'm we could have a nice steak dinner too.
I'm not sure we'll get a very good view of the final from wherever it is that we're going to be. We might be right at the back. Whereas if we were in a pub down the road, we could stand right in front of the TV and get a good look at it and get a couple of drinks maybe in us.
Well,
maybe,
I tell you
maybe
what.
A couple of pints of St. Clemens.
Tell you what, while we're talking all this, we could be sat in a pub wetting our whistles. So let's go now, because I've got an awful thirst on. I've got a fierce thirst on. We go down, we get ourselves a couple of St. Clements and we'll talk it over.
Plan some kind of strategy.
We'll talk it over, because it's not a decision we should make lightly now our Roy has given us all this money.
But Dennis, the kickoff's at 25 minutes. No, Johnson, don't worry about that.
Johnson, you can't rush into decisions like this. We could be letting down our brother for life.
We don't want to waste this £900 we've been given.
Let's take it seriously now. You're acting like a baby. Now let's get to the pub and start thinking about how to spend this money. How would Roy, if he was in, if Roy was still alive, how would he want us to spend this money? He is alive. He's just through that door there. He's about to play in the FA Cup final. You know what I mean, Dennis. What would Roy want? That's what we have to ask ourselves.
God, that's what we ask ourselves every day now, isn't it? Since we started this series of podcasts. What would Roy do? What would Roy want? He says, 45 minutes before kick-off, I finally started preparing for the game. As I began to change, suddenly two tickets appeared. He doesn't
but were they real? I didn't know. I grabbed for them and it was thin air. I was like one of those fellas who's been in the desert for weeks on end and suddenly he sees an oasis. It was a ticket oasis.
I was hallucinating. It was Mr. Ticket. He's flying around in front of my head.
I said to Mr. Clough, oh, Mr. Clough, Mr. Clough, Mr. Ticket's here. Now, young man, you're seeing things again. I've seen this happen before. This happened before the European Cup final in 1978. Gary Birtle started seeing tickets, and I'll tell you what I told him then. Get your fucking head in the game, Irishman. I'm sorry, Mr. Claw.
And then he come over and he punched me in the face. And Mr. Ticket went away.
He punched Mr. Ticket as well. He's the only man I know who'd be brave enough to punch a ticket, especially an imaginary one.
That's why I loved him so much.
The Keane Odyssey.
Yeah, it was that big final, and he says the crowd was noisy. Clough was marching jauntily ahead of us, holding Terry Venables by the hand.
Yeah,
do you remember
I remember
that?
That's fucking great. So weird. So weird. Total fucking. And to do it to Terry Venables of all. Because it's
Venables
a big power play. Because he's looked at Terry Venables, he's thinking he's one of the few other managers in the game who's almost as charismatic as me.
Yeah.
So how can I diffuse his lovable Del Boy Trotter style demeanour? Fucking easy. I'm going to hold the cunt's hand as we come out the tunnel.
Erotica.
Yeah. You know, oh, Hello, Claffy. Oh, what are you doing? Hey, just go with it. They'll tell.
And of course, the thing is, it's on TV. The cameras have picked it up. So if Venables brushes him away, it's a story.
It's a story.
With it, hasn't
it? Because Venables liked to be a nice guy as well. And Claff was a lot older than him. So the whole thing would have just looked awful. So he just had to hold his hands and grin. Fucking sensational.
If in doubt, Clough always turned to homoerotica. It's like that time when he'd punched that fan on the pitch and he had to apologise to him.
Yeah.
A couple of days later and he gave him a kiss, didn't he? Or he got the fan to give him a kiss or something like that.
He was often kissing reporters as well.
Yeah.
Now come here and give us a kiss.
Yeah. So Roy says, I was wondering as we walked up the tunnel, had Dennis and Johnson got their tickets? Somewhere in the back of my mind, there was a nagging concern about friends and acquaintances I hadn't fixed up. Unbelievable, but true.
If you watch the game, about 20 minutes in, you'll see me, I'm nowhere near the ball. The ball's up the opposite end of the pitch, and I suddenly run and launch into a two-footed tackle into thin air. Guess who I was tackling? Mr. Ticket. Because in my mind, he'd got onto the pitch and was still back with me. This fella's not here. This fella's not here, Roy. And you know why? Because you wouldn't make me available to them.
You've
known for years. Fellas back from your home days, back in Cork. Fellas that you think you're bigger than now. Is that it?
Fellas that would run into traffic for you. They'd lie down in front of an aeroplane for you or a tank or something equally dangerous. And you've let them down forever and ever and ever.
Can you hear that, Roy? That's your mammy crying. Because she knows that now you're in Nottingham with your fancy Nottingham ways, you think you're too good for her. And that's why she's not at the game, Roy. Isn't it a shame? Fuck off! And I tried to break his legs. Then I realised it was all just a figment of imagination.
Spending too much time in them big city nightclubs and the Robin Hood Visitor Centre and all that kind of thing.
Who do you think you are? Robin Hood himself? The Prince of Nottingham? Well, you're not. You're still just a pipsqueak from Cork.
And he talks about the problems that he had adapting to being a well-known celebrity after that first big season at Forest. He says, at 19, I'm afraid I wasn't ready for the role of well-known person. On the contrary, I resolved to challenge what I regarded as an assault on my natural inclinations. That's Dunphy talking, isn't it? That's a Dunphy sentence. I wouldn't play the fame game. I kept breaking my vow to steer clear of Cork City to enjoy myself. I wouldn't forsake my family and friends and become a well-known zombie. Can you imagine that? Roy Keane is a zombie. Fucking hell. After 6 weeks of partying in the close season, I returned to Nottingham a stone overweight. As always, pre-season training was murder, but the weight came off pretty quickly. And he gets a new contract from Brian Clough. £700 a week. Plus a 15 grand signing on fee. Now he's one of the most highly regarded young players, possibly the most highly regarded young player in the country at the time, and he's on 700 quid a week.
I know.
And what's that in a year? Sort of 35 grand a year.
35
fucking
grand a year.
Hell.
Fucking hell. Just pre Premier League.
Just going into the first Premier League season.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't long before other clubs came calling because they no doubt knew the predicament he was in. Just going back to him saying he spent a whole summer partying, 6 weeks partying. Mm. I can't quite imagine Roy Keane partying. There's references to it throughout this book. Not so much in the second book, which we've done before, when he's much more all about, you know, being uber professional and not trying not to drink stuff. But in this book, it's a lot of stuff references to partying, but he's never specific. And you sort of think, what can you imagine him in a disco dancing? No. Oh, I love this one. Rock the boat, don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat, don't push the boat over. Rock the boat, don't rock the boat, baby. Fucking love this song.
Hey, DJ, I got Giving Up by KC and Sunshine Band.
Well, stick it on then.
I know you played it 10 minutes ago. I want to hear it again.
I want you to play it twice in a row now.
Did you not see me throw some shapes there when you had it on before?
Hey, Dennis, you had any of that there ecstasy on you? Oh, it's absolutely delicious, so it is.
Very Moorish.
Yeah, imagine him dancing, spinning. I can't see it.
Roy Keane's definition of partying would be kind of standing with a drink in each hand, because he talked about Bacardi and Corks, didn't he, in the last
year?
Standing with a Bacardi and Cork in each hand and just staring intently, not moving.
Yeah.
Not you know, in the way that a normal person would in a pub. They'd be moving from side to side, chatting to people.
Yeah.
He'd just be standing there on the periphery, staring intently with his eyes bugging out of his head.
Do you think shiny shirt in those
shiny
days?
Shiny shirt, undone, three buttons down.
Yeah.
Like one button would go kind of each hour as the night went on.
So oh, be, getting a bit sweaty.
Yeah.
Aftershave.
Armpits will be just fucking.
Yeah, you see
soaking.
There's patches. Bit of aftershave.
Aftershave, very rudimentary.
Pack of Raban.
If that.
Blue Stratos.
Probably something more like that, yeah.
And, yeah, yeah. You can ring my bell. Ring my bell. Ring ding ding. Ring a ding a ding.
I'm coming out.
Street life. It's the only life I know. Street life.
First, I was afraid. I was petrified. Be good on that.
Lovely stuff.
Roy Keane sings the Gear Disco classics.
Oh, wouldn't it be great? New from KTEL. Roy Keane sings the legends of disco.
You make me feel mighty real.
Lovely. Lovely.
Good stuff. So he talks about Jack Charlton. And I've just basically put in our list of notes we've got here of categories and sections in the podcast. I've just put Jack Charlton, prick.
Prick, yeah.
Because he just seems to regard Charlton as a prick.
You're a prick, Charlton! Put that in. He's dumpy. Just write that down. Well, we have to lend it a bit of context. No, you don't. People don't know what I mean.
We've got a word count here, right? You know, we can't just be putting out people's names and then a single word insult about them. Just put prick!
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
He talks about meeting up with the Ireland team quite a lot and completely complains about the substandard pitch at Lansdowne Road. Jack Charlton never seemed particularly upset by the state of the playing surface. He says, on the contrary, he seemed to believe it would upset the opposition more than us. The bog-like pitch would suit our style of play. The fact we possess good footballers, more than capable of matching the visiting European sides, did not seem to be a belief Charlton shared. They had some really good players in that team at the time, didn't they? They had like...
Forest?
No, Ireland.
Oh, Ireland, yeah, well... That was their golden age, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Niall Quinn up front. Niall Quinn was always more than just a target man.
Kevin Sheedy, yeah. Probably still going. Paul McGrath still going at the back.
Yeah, really.
Dog boy Terry Phelan.
Dog boy.
Dog boy Terry Phelan, he was good. And of course, the young Dennis Irwin.
Of course, yeah. Young, bland Dennis Irwin.
Mm.
With a cardigan underneath his Ireland shirt.
Before he'd started his chain of Dennis Irwin-themed restaurants.
Yeah. He was probably still quite young then and he still had a bit of something about him before it was all knocked out of him as he got older.
What, you mean he still would have had maybe butter on his bread in the morning?
Butter on his bread, yeah. He probably...
Put a little bit of squash in his water, like just a drop of lemon barley water or something.
Yeah, he'd use coloured pencils in his colouring book instead of just grey pencil.
Nowadays, I've heard from people who know him that when he gets his colouring books, he's still into them, but it's gone a step further since he retired, and he opens the colouring book and just stares at the pictures.
Right.
He doesn't colour them in,
really?
Neither with colour nor normal pencil. He just likes to read them like you or I would read books. He just looks at colouring.
He reads the picture.
He just looks at colouring in books and someone goes, Dennis, you're not going to do any colouring. You got your pencils. You've not even touched them. Oh, no, I wouldn't want to ruin the book. I just like to look at the shapes. And in my mind, I imagine what they'd look like if they had colour in them.
I try to put myself in the mind of the young fella who devised this book and put the line drawings together. Would he really want his lovely line drawings to be sullied
by
some coloured pencils? from a stranger? I don't think so. I don't think, when he put this colouring book together, I don't think he really wanted it to be coloured in. So I won't be doing that.
I used to in my wilder days, of course. I remember when I had the full set of Caran d'Ache pencils. But that was crazy times. I've been through a lot of personal development since then.
He gets back to Jack Charlton. He says, I found it impossible to relate to him as a man or a coach. And then he moves on to Morissette as Jack's number two, which he regularly does.
Yeah.
Another barb here. As for Morissette, as I was never sure what his role was. He did, however, keep Big Jack supplied with chewing gum. Morissette, just put cunt there, Dunphy. Biggest letters you can type.
I tell you what, though, you say what you want about Morris. If you ever run out to Double Mint, he was your man.
Back at Forest, he's complaining about his teammates, and he says too many of them felt the world owed them a living.
Oh, yeah.
Turning up for training in the morning, having a laugh and a moan for a couple of hours before going back to the comfort of their homes, out shopping, or straight to the golf club.
Well, that, what he's describing is just the life of a footballer.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
he's
a charmed
saying,
life, isn't
these
it?
Fucking footballers. Yeah. They turn up, they train, then they go and do other things. The damn training are playing football. And it's like, well, yeah, but that's, if you're a footballer, you're only contractually obliged to be at training at most clubs until lunchtime.
Yeah.
Then you're free to do what you want to do, and then you turn up on match day. Yeah. That's how it fucking works.
It's not enough for Roy. It's not enough for
it's
him.
It's not enough. Stay on the pitch.
The afternoons, they should be, yes, they should be out on the pitch voluntarily, just wandering around, getting used to the dimensions and everything. Becoming familiar with the grass, wandering around the city ground, get to know every blade of grass by name. That's what I would have done.
Run up and down. I'd go into the city ground. They tried to stop me. The groundsman would say he didn't want anyone running on the pitch during the week. I would get him out the way. I'd do whatever I had to do. And then I'd get a big stick. And I would throw the stick for myself. And I'd throw it as far as I could. And then I would run after the stick. And I would pick it up in my teeth. And I would run back to where I started. And I'd do that again and again and again until it was too dark to carry on.
And sometime I'd bend over on all fours and I'd walk around and I'd eat a little bit of the grass, chew it up there, chew it up nice and good so I could become part of the pitch. And a groundsman would come and shout at me and make me cough it up and hit me on the back. And then I'd go over to the corner flag and I'd cock my leg and I'd do a little piss. It made me feel good.
And that way I knew that I'd marked my territory. So when the away team came on a Saturday, they were intimidated.
Me.
They could smell it. And one time I... do you know what I did? You know, I had an awful bad itching in my ass, so I got on my ass and I started dragging myself along using my hands on my ass. You know, like you see the doggies do. I did that on the pitch. And looking back, it was a strange thing to do. But I played well that weekend. And I don't know whether or not that played a role. It was something that I often thought about doing at Old Trafford as well. But Fergie didn't stand for that kind of nonsense.
I stopped doing it at Forest one time when Mr. Clough come on the pitch and he was on all fours as well. And he looked like he was going to try and hump me. I thought, this has gone too far.
Now, come here, young man. I am going to hump you now. I did this to Trevor Francis just after signing him. And he went on to be one of the greatest players of his generation.
If it was good enough for him, it was good enough for you.
Irishman.
Submit.
Irishman, have you ever been humped before? I wouldn't know about that, sir.
He talks about
Peter Shilton used to love a humping before match day.
We didn't used to go on pre-season tours. We'd just wander around the city ground pitch on all fours, fucking the living daylights out of each other. Won me one league championship and two European Cups, Irishman.
What have you won? Nothing. Now bend over.
He's complaining about the players. He says after good results they wallowed in the glory. When the results went the wrong way they blamed someone else. This pissed me off. I'm certain my late arrival in the game was a decisive influence on my own attitude to Brian Clough, to everything really. I was hungrier than most, though not hungrier than Stuart Pearce. He defers only, I think, to Stuart Pearce in this book. I don't think there's anybody else in the world of football ever.
Dunphy, just write this. Everyone apart from Stuart Pearce is a prick. Write that down. And then we can cover off the whole part of this career like that. Well, I don't know now, Roy. And I think we're going to need more than that of your memories of your Forest days. That's my memory. Everyone's a prick apart from Stuart Pearce.
Players moaned about him too. Fuck off PSC, they'd whine when he demanded more in training or a match. They whispered he was a tight bastard with money. Brackets. He was. Well, he must have changed because he's just been a whole day in North Korea, hasn't he?
Exactly, and that can't have been cheap.
Exactly. But so what? He says, we were paid to do the business, and Stuart Pearce led by example. He never demanded anything of anyone that he wasn't prepared to do himself. We're not going to what Stuart Pearce might have done, because sometimes we bump into him in the corridors of TalkSport, don't we?
Yeah, I know, we're in his domain.
Careful.
Sam, have I heard what you've been saying on that podcast about humping back in the golden age of Nottingham Forest? It's not on. You're sullying the memory of Brian Clough.
Oh, God.
Oh, sorry, Psycho.
Sorry, Mr. Psycho.
It's just a bit of fun. It's mainly Andy, anyway.
He got carried away. He's swimming off. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Mainly Andy. I mean, like, I'm more of a serious journalist, but Andy just says anything.
He didn't have much of an education. He likes to show off.
Yeah, I don't like the look of him now, he seemed to say. I thought he talked funny. And I knew there had to be some sort of explanation.
I don't even think I understood everything he was saying, to be quite honest.
Mind me and my brief spell at Newcastle United.
Didn't have a clue what was going on up there. And of course, Kenny Dalglish was in charge. He doesn't even speak English. What's the next bit we're at? Yeah. Again, he's talking about... he says, the game is full of bluffers. That's my favourite word that Roy Keane uses.
Bluffing.
Bluffers. He says, banging on about rolling your sleeves up, having the right attitude and taking some pride in the shirt you're wearing. A manager or coach who trades in those cliché generalisations, and there are many of them, is missing the point. Brian Clough dealt in detail, facts, specific incidents, and invariably he got it right. I loved it because no less than anyone else, my instinctive reaction was, not me, boss. Brian Clough and Stuart Pearce helped me shed that habit. I lived and learned in that hard school. I think he's always spoken about Clough being the sort of major influence on him as a player, doesn't he? It's that thing, it's that Jesuit thing, give me a boy till the age of seven, I'll give you the man.
Mm.
But like Clough was the...
I can do that at an older age.
He'll do that to you in the first spheres of your career, and that'll make you the player you are.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see when he gets onto Fergie, because his two main managers in his life were two of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what his opinions on him are. I mean, we know how it ended because we had it in the last book. This is it!
He talks about being away on a trip with Ireland, and they lose 3-1 away to the USA. And he says, for some of the Blazers of the Football Association of Ireland, this was the life. The trip of a lifetime, I heard one Blazer, as he describes them as. They're less than men. He dubs them Blazers. I felt the football was merely an excuse to justify this trip of a lifetime. On the morning we were due to fly home, Steve Staunton and I went out for a drink. It was our turn to party now. In fact, we were merely carrying on from the night before. Be the same thing. It'll be a Bacardi and Coke in each hand. And
hey, Steve-o.
Shirt ripped down to the waist.
Do you want a party tonight? Have you got your shiny shirt? Do you want to go to the disco?
I got a suitcase full of shiny shirts if you want to borrow one.
You got your pack of Rabanne with you? It doesn't matter.
Let's party.
Doesn't matter. You can have a square to mine. Now we're going to go and find the best disco in town.
Says we were late arriving back at the team hotel. The rest of the party was sitting in the coach outside. Steve and I raced to our rooms to pack our bags. As we boarded the coach, Big Jack, he's put that in inverted commas, Big Jack, started ranting and roaring. Where the fucking hell have you been? You kept us all waiting, you too. Why didn't you go without us? I shot back. I didn't ask you to wait.
That's a you do it style comeback, yeah. Isn't it? Fine, fucking go.
Yeah.
What? I didn't even fucking set you to be here.
I'll be on my own.
Yeah. I fucking walk. I don't need a fucking lift, you puff.
In the silence that followed, I looked him straight in the eye. He neither frightened nor impressed me. He was a bully. He didn't like it when the boot was on the other foot. He backed off. Oh, power play one.
Yeah.
Early on as well, 19-year-old Roy Keane. I took my seat at the back of the bus, obviously at the back of the bus. Sitting on the
Everyone
back.
Get out the fucking way. I sit at the back seat in the middle.
You're right out of order, you. Looking up, I saw Mick McCarthy, Captain Fantastic himself, glaring down at me. Go and fuck yourself, I told him.
Oh, brilliant. This is the start of something that ends a decade later in Saipan.
And obviously he writes about it later in the book, but he's just dropped that in there. This is where it starts.
Go fuck yourself.
Go and fuck yourself.
Imagine that, a 19-year-old saying it to the captain. And, of course, Mick McCarthy, the main thing I remember about him as a player was he was prematurely grey. So that said it all. I mean, he was an and he looks like that eagle bloke from the Muppets as well, doesn't
Sam
he?
Sam the Eagle.
Yeah, he looks like Sam the Eagle with grey hair. So he's not someone... He's an intimidating presence. And, you know, Roy Keane's just a young whippersnapper.
Well, of course...
Go fuck yourself.
Of course, Roy wouldn't have seen him as being an Irishman because he was from Barnsley, wasn't he? Mick McCarthy.
Go fuck yourself, you fucking eagle man.
You're right out of order. Right proper out of order. Go on, fuck yourself. Captain Fantastic. Again, he's put that in.
Captain Fantastic. Captain Fuck My Leg.
Cuntin Fucktastic or something. Fuck off.
Leave me alone. My head's throbbing. I've been listening to fucking disco music all night. Gary Gaynor. Sylvester. Randy Crawford. Art, Wind and Fire. The Lot.
Cool and the Gang.
All of them guys. Oh my God, my head is ringing. Oh God, I've been chafed by my shiny shirt. The last thing I need is you, you daft eagle looking cunt.
Fuck off,
coming
granddad.
Over and telling me with your fucking grey hair. Looks the colour of one of my fucking shirts. Hey, Staunton, don't you, what does his hair look like? It looks like one of my shiny shirts.
That reminds me of that time when Alan Pardew had a run in with Pellegrini.
Oh, yeah.
On the touchline, and called him an old cunt.
Yeah, fuck off, you old cunt.
And the age gap between them is 8 years.
Yeah. Mind you, that I mean, Pard, who obviously deems himself to be an extremely attractive man,
40 going on 29.
Yeah, you can forgive him because, as we've said about Pellegrini, he does look older than he actually is. I mean, he looks around 400 or 500 years old.
Yeah, well, he should have called him an old-looking cunt then, shouldn't he? Should have been more accurate.
Yeah, yeah. You fucking prematurely old-looking cunt. Fucking tree-faced freak.
Fine. Valid observation.
Touché. Touché, Pards. It's true what you once claimed about yourself. You are the king of banter.
Right, we'll wrap it up for this episode because it begins in the next one with his final season at Nottingham Forest. Contract negotiations, getting tapped up by Blackburn. A fight with the hockey team in Jersey. Brian Clough hiding from Graham Taylor. And lots more. And that will come in part 6 next week.
Until then, go fuck yourself, you prick.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.